Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished individual from New Delhi, India, Papa CJ. Papa CJ, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me here.
CJ is a world-renowned stand-up comedian. I've seen several of his shows, and I'm sure all of you listening and viewing will Google him. He's an executive coach and he's an author. He's an MBA from Oxford, and he's spoken at Harvard Business School. So CJ, with such an amazing kind of diversity in the work that you have done, let's talk first about stand-up comedy.
Sure.
What made you move from the corporate world to stand-up comedy?
Two things, sir. Firstly, my experience in the corporate world wasn't a very pleasant one.
Okay.
I finished my MBA from Oxford University. I got a job with IBM in their consulting division in London. Mm-hmm. And this was the year 2000 when the whole dot-com crash had happened.
Correct.
And I was a strange fit or misfit in consulting, mm-hmm. because I was the youngest MBA on the Oxford program. Uh-huh. I was 22 when I joined.
Wow.
So when I took a job, because I had an MBA, I wasn't really at analyst level, but I was also 23. So I wasn't at consultant level as well.
Okay.
So I was somewhat in between, and I got thrown into this organization and nobody really looked after me.
Mm.
So I was on the bench a lot. I wasn't really put on too many projects. And as a result, you know, I had gone in there with these, you know, ambitions of making it a real success in the corporate world. And I was just left to flounder.
Mm.
But I also had a whole chunk of student loans that I had to pay back.
Mm.
So I stuck around in that job for about 4 years. And it was a difficult time in the industry. So within the organization, I had 6 different jobs over the course of my first 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
People around me kept losing their jobs.
Mm.
But because I was sort of good with people. So other people in the organization sort of hired me into their teams.
Mm.
But after 4 years in the organization, I was able to pay back all my student loans. And I took a sabbatical.
Okay.
There was a deal going around at the time where you could get 1 year off on 35% pay,
mm-hmm.
and have the job waiting for you when you came back.
Amazing. Mm.
So I took that opportunity.
Mm.
And in that year off, one of the things I did was I went to the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland.
Okay.
And I saw stand-up comedy for the first time.
Mm.
And I thought this was the most amazing thing ever. Mm. I mean, here's a guy on stage just having fun.
Mm.
And that was his job. So I thought to myself, you know, I've got to try this. So I chucked up my job.
Mm.
3 months later, I was on stage. I did 250 gigs in my first 10 months.
Wow.
700 in the first 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of never looked back.
Amazing. What an amazing journey. And, you know, this is what someone would say is that you're actually making money out of your own passion and having fun at it. So,
not exactly to start with. I mean, I gave you the short version.
Yeah.
After the first year of doing shows,
mm-hmm.
I was absolutely broke because you get paid nothing when you start.
Okay.
So I took a job in a recruitment firm. I used to work in the day, perform at night.
Uh-huh.
Then one of my clients was an organization that did executive coaching. So I qualified as a coach with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that coaching that helped me fund my comedy habits, so to say.
Okay.
I talk about it like it's drugs or something.
Yeah.
But so with that organization, then I trained about 50 companies all over the globe,
mm-hmm.
which was also a very interesting experience because I worked with Google, Nike, Accenture, Deutsche Bank, UBS, a whole bunch of wonderful blue chips.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very different to stand-up because in stand-up, you're the center of attention, you're talking and you're the star.
Mm.
But for a successful coaching program, they're the stars.
Correct.
And the less you talk, the better a session it is.
Well said. Yes, well said. So, you know, I've often wondered, people in showbiz, if I can use the term for stand-up comedy also,
mm-hmm.
they are individual brands. Which Papa yes. CJ is. But it is a huge task to carve out your own space. As you said, you know, first few gigs, you didn't really make any money. What were some of your challenges and learnings as you were getting yourself known?
I think, sir, what happens is that there is an evolution you go through as an artist.
Mm.
So when I started performing, you initially you want the confidence that you can make people laugh. Mm. So you'll go for the easy joke. Mm. So the kind of joke I would say, let's say in India, is that I live in Delhi. Mm. And as somebody who lives in Delhi, I don't understand the language they speak in Mumbai.
Mm.
You know, we call it bread, they call it pav.
Yeah.
We call it pyaz, they call it kanda. We call it a servant quarter, they call it a 2 BHK. So now that's the kind of joke I know, it's guaranteed
right.
laugh.
Right.
Then what happens is we'll continue to do observational comedy. Mm. So one of the jokes, for example, is that I grew up in Calcutta.
Mm.
I remember taking driving lessons in London. Mm. And this instructor asked me, he said, why don't you Indians drive in a straight line?
Mm.
I said, listen, I'm from Calcutta. Mm. In England, you drive on the left of the road. In Calcutta, we drive on what is left of the road.
Right? Yes.
Then what happens is you want to be seen as cool, as edgy. You'll pick on positions of authority. You'll use bad language. And you'll do the kind of jokes that make you seem cool or clever.
Mm. Mm.
But I think eventually, because we operate in a profession that has no rules, no boundaries, no guidelines, no social norms,
mm.
the journey is inwards.
Mm.
I've always said that stand-up comedy, or many art forms for that matter, is an outward expression of an inward journey.
Well said.
And when you get to that point, you find your voice.
Mm.
You get comfortable in your own skin. You talk about the things that you find funny, your perspective, your value system. And you almost stop caring about the audience.
Mm.
You know, your audience will find you.
Mm.
I mean, a Russell Peters or a Chris Rock or a Jerry Seinfeld is not going to change their point of view depending on who's in the room.
Correct.
And I think that's a source from where your brand is formed.
Mm.
I mean, if you study branding, one of the most important things is authenticity.
Correct.
You have to be able to live your brand.
Mm.
Then, of course, there is the, you know, there's the communication of the brand. There's the commitment to the brand.
Absolutely.
But I think it all comes from a place of authenticity.
Mm.
You have to be comfortable in your own skin. And I did not leave the corporate world to join a creative field
mm.
and be in a rat race in the creative field. You well, know, sure, as in any art form, I mean, it's nowadays everyone says follow your passion, you know, but passion doesn't put food on the table.
Absolutely.
So in every single art form, there are some gigs you do to feed the soul and there are some gigs you do to feed the stomach.
Well said. Well said.
What you do to feed the stomach is what finances you to be able to do the things you want to do to feed your soul. From a brand point of view, I think the most important aspect is that authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And everything sort of builds on top of that.
Very good. Yes, I agree completely. So, you know, CJ, I've often, you know, in all my travels around the world, I've often been told that we Indians,
mm-hmm.
Despite having the largest population, are probably the most well-known prudes. And we are also a group of people who don't know how to laugh at ourselves.
Okay.
I'd love to get your perspective on the second part. On how are you? Do you see us Indians laughing at ourselves?
Well, firstly, sir, I'd like to respectfully disagree with you on both fronts.
Okay.
I remember on the first front, one of the first few jokes I used to crack in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
I used to say that, you know, in the West here, you guys show sex in your movies,
mm-hmm.
and we show men and women running around flowers and trees.
Correct.
Yet we've hit a population of 1.3 billion,
mm.
you know, apparently through cross-pollination.
Yes.
So I don't think we are prudish.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've been doing stand-up comedy in India for the last 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been making a living doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have been able to do that if we were the kind of people who were not able to laugh at ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I sometimes joke that we are the largest democracy on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
We are also the largest hypocrisy on the planet.
True.
We are very conscious of what we are seen to be laughing at.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you an example. Every single corporate show that I'm invited for,
mm-hmm.
I'm given a remit in advance.
Mm-hmm.
CJ, this is our organization. This is our brand. This is what we stand for. Can you please keep it clean?
Mm-hmm.
I get that on the day of the show. They have two drinks and say, "Yaar, thoda masale wala sunao. Give us mm-hmm. some non-veg jokes. Mm-hmm. We want the real stuff." But if something goes wrong, I have to take the blame.
Correct. Right?
They'll say, "Oh, look, these comedians."
Yes.
So what I do is I get on, I'll give you an example. I did a show for TCS, mm. reasonably conservative company. I had 300 CIOs in the audience. I got on stage. I said, listen, I'm here on behalf of TCS. They understand their brand. I understand human behavior. So if you can understand that the Papa CJ brand is completely different to the TCS brand, then I can give you a slightly naughtier show. Give me a chair if you want a clean show. Complete silence.
Okay.
Give me a chair if you want a naughty show. Everybody cheers. Then I look at the senior most person from my client and say, sir, what do you suggest we do? He says, give the audience what they want. Their brand is protected. My audience gets what they want. I can do what I want. Everybody's happy. So it's just a little bit of psychological gamesmanship that is involved in getting them to give you the permission. But by and large, I do believe we have wonderful audiences.
I agree.
And in fact, recently I did a roast. I was invited to do a roast of an organization. I did 45 minutes of material roasting the entire senior management and the company and their industry and how they behave. And they loved it.
Wow. You know, my perspective I was giving you was from my vintage. And it's a really nice and a pleasant kind of intervention that you have made to say that we have changed in the corporate world. And that is so fantastic. But moving on, CJ, you know, with over 2,000 shows in over 25 countries, what defines success to you?
Ah, that's such a beautiful question, sir. Because I think, you know, we've grown up in a world where your definition of success is defined by other people.
Correct.
For me, I get great joy from being able to uplift people and help them be the best versions of themselves. You know, so those are the umbrellas under which I do the various things that I do. You know, whether it's a executive coaching or a stand-up comedy. For me, so when I interview people, the last question I always ask them, and many people haven't thought about it, is how would you like to be remembered? And the answer to that question for me is with a smile. So for me, if I am able to bring joy to people in whatever capacity it is, in whatever small or large way, for me, that is success. You know, I'm not driven by money or fame or all of the others. Fame, so to say, happens to be a byproduct of what I do because it's a profession that is in the limelight. But if I can just uplift people and bring them joy, that is success. Wow. I mean, I've had the privilege of performing on stages at, you know, the Sydney Opera House or Broadway. But as a part of, I have an initiative called the Happiness Project. One of the things I was doing pre-COVID is, and completely free, of course, was going into the homes and hospital rooms of people who have been unwell for a long time and performing just for them, sometimes two people, five people, just the family. And the joy I got from that is greater than performing on any glamorous stage in the world.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So, you know, you just spoke to me about how beautifully you ring-fenced TCS to protect their brand, and you carried on with your show.
Yeah.
My next question is that what is the unique style you have created that connects so well with audiences? And I've seen some of your shows on YouTube.
I think, sir, there's a couple of things that I do really well. One of them is crowd interaction. So there are times where I can get on a stage and interact with the audience for 45 minutes without telling a single pre-written joke. And they are entertained.
Wow.
And the beauty of that is that it's all being made up on the spot. Nobody in the world will ever see that show again because it's about the people in the room. It's literally being created in that moment. I think that is one of the things I'm good at. And the other thing I do is I customize content. So like I said, this corporate show I did recently, I did 45 minutes purely about them. You know, I would have spent 7 or 8 hours talking to people in the organization, finding about the business, about the leaders, about the people. And it is so unique and so personalized that makes it special. I do private events if I'm hosting a wedding or a birthday. You know, I know about each of the guests. I know about the person who's getting married, the bride, the groom, the families. In a Sangeet, when I introduce somebody, I'll have 3 stories about them. Often I end up knowing more about the families and the organizations than my client themselves,
okay.
You know, because I'm able to speak to so many different people I'm able to spot patterns.
Mm.
And I think the strength is in taking disparate pieces of information, connecting them, and then creating humor out of that.
Mm.
You know, so for example, this corporate show I did, mm. there was one certain gentleman who is on the management team who's a vegan.
Mm-hmm.
He has also written a book about trains. Now, his business wasn't really doing very well, his particular business.
Mm.
So one of the jokes I did was I said, you know, we have so-and-so person who is a vegan
mm-hmm.
and there is no meat on his plate, just like there is no meat in his business. And I said, but he's a very learned man. He's written a book about trains. He knows the direction every train is going in. You know, so the Himalayan Queen is going north from Delhi. The Calcutta Rajasthani is going east. His business is going south.
Mm. Very interesting. Very, very fascinating.
There's things like that. And in fact, the group CEO of that organization was ex-Israel Special Forces.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his habits was at a management team meeting, if there were peanuts or things like that, taking, you know, he'd sort of almost take everybody's things and, you know, keep it to himself.
Mm.
So I did a joke about that, saying, listen, somebody needs to tell him that these are just nuts. It's not the West Bank. You don't have to try and capture all of it.
Well said. Very well.
It's a naughty joke, but example. Yeah.
Very well said. But, you know, now coming to my next question, there is a lot of debate on using sensitive topics on comedy. Now, you know, there are views and counter views on everything we do in our country.
Yeah.
I'd love to get your perspective on how should sensitive topics be handled. And because you can't judge how others should react to that, to such topics.
So this is a 5-hour conversation.
Okay.
Because what is sensitive to one person is not sensitive to the other.
Absolutely.
Hmm. Now, I'll tell you how I navigate the space. I mean, this is an unending discussion.
Yeah. Yeah.
When people come to my show, if it's a Papa CJ show, in a public auditorium, I will do what I want, you know, based on my sensibilities. So, I mean, I'm not the kind, I will not do jokes about Mother Teresa. I will not do jokes about Mahatma Gandhi. I will not pick on senior citizens. I'm also very careful in that I'm very happy to tease people. I'm very happy to embarrass them. I will never be hurtful.
Correct.
And that is a very fine line to draw.
Yeah.
What happens with some of the young comedians is, you know, when comedy started in Mumbai, you had performers from the Comedy Store in London who would come and perform. Now, these guys would pick on the audience. But each of these guys had over 20 years of experience. A lot of the young comics watching them wouldn't understand the nuances of that interaction. So they would think, oh, crowd interaction means abusing people or, you know, being hurtful. So I personally would never be hurtful. That's not that's just not who I am. So this is at my own show. If I come to a corporate show or a private event, I am very careful about the sensitivities of the people in that room. So I draw a line there. When in doubt, I would err on the side of caution, because I cannot come to your house and insult your guests.
Correct.
And to each their own. I mean, I'm not, for me, it is not so important to make a specific point on stage as much as it is to bring joy to the people who are in the room. That being said, you know, sometimes, so in India, they will say that, oh, comedians are vulgar. Now, why does a comedian crack a joke? To make the audience laugh.
Correct.
If the audience stops laughing at those jokes, that comedian will immediately stop doing them because he looks like a fool. So my argument is the audience is vulgar.
Correct.
You know, the only reason the comedian continues to crack those jokes is because people keep laughing at them. The other thing is I've always been a fan of live stand-up comedy. I enjoy having the audience, you know, in front of me. Now, at a live gig, people understand my persona, they understand my intent, and they understand the context within which a certain joke has been cracked. Now, if you were to record the same thing and stick it on the internet, people who were not in that room may watch that and get offended.
Correct.
Because they don't understand the persona, they don't understand the intent, they don't understand the context.
Correct.
So these are some of my views around this. I mean, it's a very gray area. But for me personally, I try my best not to be hurtful, but I am playful. I will tease, I will embarrass, I will joke, I will pull somebody's leg.
Yeah.
But to each their own, I don't judge.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So, CJ Lau, let's move to your second avatar as an executive coach. What lessons do you draw from comedy when you coach?
Oh my God, so much. In fact, I think there's a reason, a lot of reasons why people come to me for coaching is because I'm able to bring in learnings from a field that is so different. So for example, I run one of the courses I run, it's called A Comedian's Guide to Communication Strategy.
Okay.
I break down how we as comedians in an age of limited attention spans grab and retain attention immediately and how you can apply that for your business, for your marketing strategy, and as individuals. And it's not just tools and techniques to grab and retain attention, but it's strategies as well. I'll give you an example. One of the best pieces of advice I got was that it's very important for you to grow in the dark. You know, when you hit the limelight, you don't have the freedom to screw up. I mean, so if you come for a show and I'm at the Sydney Opera House and I do something that doesn't work, you're like, I had heard of this guy. He's not that good. So now when you want to succeed all the time, you're under pressure. So you play safe. You're like, okay, I know this works. I'm going to go with this. As a result, you don't innovate, you don't experiment, and you don't grow. You start to stagnate. So as a comedian, what do? I will go to a small open mic night where my name is not on the poster. I will try something different. I will experiment. I will do it a few different times until I figure out how it works well. And then I'll bring it into the larger shows. So my question for you as a corporate organization is, where is your open mic night? Where are you going to experiment? What are the risks you would like to take? What would you like to try? So in a thought leadership session, I would just do it like this in a conversation. But in a workshop, I would then put teams in small groups and give them half an hour. Saying, think about all the experiments you want to do, the risks you want to take, you know, with which product, which market, which customer, at what price point, and when are you going to do it? So by the end of the session, like literally on the wall, they've got a flip chart, a bunch of flip charts with an entire communication or marketing strategy in place.
Amazing. Amazing. So I've got time for one more question, and I'm going to now move to your book or books. Tell me about your books.
I've just written one so far. It is an autobiography. I'm hoping it's part one. It was based on a show that I used to perform called Naked. And the ethos behind the show is that as human beings, we build walls around ourselves, which hide our deepest hopes and fears and desires. One brick at a time, I'm removing those walls, exposing myself with all my vulnerability, all my pain. It is terrifying yet exhilarating at the same time. But at the end of it, while you're completely naked, you're completely free.
Correct.
So 80% of that show was very funny and 20% was deeply intense. That show was then, you know, turned into a book. The book has a lot more than the show because the medium of print offers you the freedom to add a few more layers. You're not under pressure to get to a punchline as soon as possible. So that's where it came from.
Okay.
I also use it as a foundation for some executive coaching. I run a program called Naked Leadership, which looks at authenticity, risk-taking, vulnerability, storytelling, gratitude. Those are some of the things that come out of that. But I don't really consider myself an author. A publisher happened to see the show, said this should be a book. But yes, I do enjoy writing. I've been, I'm doing a few newsletters on LinkedIn. I've written for Harvard Business Review. So I do enjoy it, and it's just something I...
Fantastic. CJ, on that note, and your incredible thought of growing the dark, which I will take away amongst many other things, thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about your amazing journey from Oxford to IBM to stand-up comedy. Thank you for talking to me about what goes into making Papa CJ into such a successful and well-known, well-loved brand, not just in India, but in so many other countries and locations. And thank you for talking to me about some of the lessons you get from comedy for coaching and your book. Thank you again and good luck.
It's my pleasure, though. Thank you so much for having me on your platform. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.